eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The following podcast is hashtag Boone approved. It's time for another edition of the Boone Podcast.
If I get three pairs of shoes from a collective 14 gifts, I'm good.
On today's program, we flip the script on Booney.
With 141, his second home run in as many nights and his third.
Today, we stick him under the lights and shove a mic in his face.
And I mean, we're flying through these tree-lined trails going 1,000 miles an hour.
He is CBS Sports Radio host and the executive producer of the Boone Podcast, Rich Herrera.
I want to know about you guys. What was life like growing up around your dad while he was playing when you guys were younger?
Now, in its fourth year, this is the one and only Rhett Boone Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Turning Two with Booney. I'm the executive producer of this podcast, Rich Rare. Of course, Brett Boone. Booney, how are you, bud?
I am doing well. How are you, Rich?
Come on, Booney, let's get a little more energy today. We are in the middle of the season.
I'm doing well. How are you, Rich?
All right, let's go. That's more like it. Let's just get to the thing that everybody and their brother has been talking about, and it involves the Boone family. Your brother, Aaron, ejected by Hunter Wendelstedt. So I'll set the story for everybody. Yankees are playing the Oakland Athletics, and very first hitter of the game, controversial call, if you want to call it that, foul ball off the foot, whether it hit him or not, foul tip. Anyway, didn't go the Yankees' way. Yankees squawk a little bit. Hunter says, that's enough. I don't want to hear anything else from you, Aaron. Anybody else says anything in that dugout, you're gone. Aaron says, fine. So he's sitting there at the end of his dugout, looking at his nails, paying attention to the game, not saying anything to Hunter Wendelstedt. And all of a sudden, someone yells something at the umpire, and he turns around and goes, Aaron, you're gone. And he ejects the younger of the two Boone brothers. The middle Boone brother gets run. And it's now taken on this whole life of itself. I thought Aaron was very diplomatic after the ball game, obviously frustrated for getting thrown out of the game, more frustrated they lost to the Oakland A's. Hunter said, listen, I told him, I don't want to hear anything else out of the dugout. Somebody said something, and that's why I threw Aaron out of the ball game. And he explained, we don't want to throw the players out. People spend money to see the players. So Aaron's responsible for what goes on in his dugout. So I think I got that all set up correctly. Brett, your reaction.
Could you please expand on your question?
Give me your thoughts.
I think it's hilarious that people make that big of a deal of it. I mean, it was like, okay, I mean, you set it up perfectly. It's the beginning of the game. Hunter's in one of those moods. He doesn't want to hear it. Aaron says a few words. He turns to Aaron. He said, listen, I don't want to hear another word, and I don't care if it's you. I don't care if it's your player. You're the captain of the ship. You're responsible for any other player that says a word in there. All the players heard it. Okay, the ground rules are set. The fan pops off. Hunter thinks it's coming from the dugout. Aaron, you're gone. Obviously, Hunter wasn't having a good day early in the day. He was in a real ornery mood. He throws Aaron. Aaron goes crazy. What do you mean? after the dust settled, Hunter made an obvious mistake. I'm sure Hunter woke up the next morning and thought, okay, I didn't take all these things because, yes, it was the fan. Okay, Hunter Wendelstadt's going to get a slap on the wrist. Aaron's going to get no consequences, which he shouldn't. They'll move on. Aaron understands it was an honest mistake. Put it behind you. It's really no big deal. It's just more drama and a big misunderstanding. It was like an episode of Three's Company, a big misunderstanding. But I think everybody's fine.
Now, Aaron, I thought, was very diplomatic because I watched his comments after the game. And he said, you know what? He said nothing else. I didn't say anything. It was the fan behind him. And Yes Network actually had a camera trained on Aaron. He was wearing his big red watch. He was standing there looking at his hands when he got run. He wasn't even looking at Hunter. Now, I also read Hunter's pull report after the game that said, I heard something on the far end of the dugout, is what Hunter is claiming now after it's all said and done. I heard something at the far end of the dugout. That's why I threw Aaron out of the ballgame. Now, because Yes Network had that camera trained on Aaron and they caught the fan over his shoulder, it looks like Hunter mistakenly heard the fan and gave the credit to Aaron, which ran him out of the ballgame. So let's go down the rabbit hole just a little bit, Brett. Explain to us what's allowed and what's not allowed during the course of a game. Getting on the umpire, riding the umpire, chirping at the umpire, where's the line?
Well, it depends. It depends the game, the importance of the game. Is it a postseason game? Is it a regular season game? Is it getaway day? What kind of mood is the umpire in? You can't argue balls and strikes. That's always been the basic rule. You can't argue balls and strikes from the dugout. Now, you can say something. They'll warn you. That's enough. I don't want to hear another word. It's all subjective. It's all due to the umpire, his feelings, and what kind of mood he's in that day. Now, I think umpires will take into consideration the severity of the game, the importance of the game. If it's World Series game four, obviously they're going to have a much longer rope, especially with a player, because you don't want to be that umpire that kicks out a key player in a big game and have to hear about that for the rest of your career, especially if something goes sideways. So I think it's a pretty long rope with most players, most managers. Very rarely will an umpire look into a dugout, though. And here's what I was a little curious about. Very rarely will an umpire look into a dugout and talk to the manager and say, I don't care who says anything. If anybody says anything, you're getting thrown out, talking to the manager. Rarely have I seen that in my years. Usually it's an isolated event and it's whoever's saying it and the manager has nothing to do with it. But in this case, it was almost like we're in gym class in seventh grade. Whoever says another word, all of us are running laps. So I haven't really heard that too often, but that's apparently what happened.
Well, I think that's also a little new school, because the umpires in the past, I think in your day, would just turn around and go, Booney, you're out, because he heard you chirping. This one I thought was more nuanced, because he said, Aaron, I'm going to throw you out because I'm not going to throw out one of the players, because the people paid money to see the players, not you. I'm not going to throw Soto out. I'm not going to throw out any of your stars, right. But you're going to be thrown out, which I thought was a little different.
It was kind of like, okay, I don't care what little Johnny does, Mr. Jones. If Johnny acts up again, you're going to be written up. You are the parent. You are responsible. So Aaron was the parent to the players, which to me at the big league level is a little silly. I understand all sides
of
it.
So what would you rather have him do? Would you have run the player or run Aaron? Somebody's going to get run, because they already told you that's enough.
Well, Aaron's going to say in his particular situation, run me every time. If my player's got a problem with something, of course, run me up. Aaron can't do anything to win the game. Once the game starts, the manager's irrelevant.
Well, that's what we talk about. You know, Aaron gets run all the time because he stands up for his players. He's passionate about it. The one thing I will say about Aaron Boone, anybody ever asked me, there is not a phony bone in Aaron Boone's body. No, Aaron, when he's out there on the field, that is the real deal. He is the reincarnation of Bob Boone with a little bit of Sue Boone, little bit of his family lineage, and he ain't a phony. That's one thing you can always say about Aaron, is he is legit when he goes out there and he's standing up for his players.
No, without a doubt, without a doubt. And it's funny to watch, you know, he's, it's like he's, you know, he's like, I flash back and I've told this story many times. It's when he argues, that's 8-year-old Aaron Boone arguing with me and me telling him that that wiffle ball home run was foul. I know it's fair, but I got to get him going. I mean, it's the same kid
just
right
tormenting
there.
Him, right?
Just in an adult body. So yeah, Aaron's it's 100% legit. There's no premeditation to any of Aaron's antics, but I do give him a hard time. And I, you know, I say, Aaron, we get it, man. You're missed. Yeah, you love your players, you back them. We get it. All right. Point taken. Quit getting thrown out of the game. Quit yelling about that little stupid box. I get back to the box again. Quit picking apart the box. That was a ball. That was a strike. Who cares? So I give him a hard time about it, but he's gonna do what he does.
Okay, so you had Ted Barrett on this week. I thought it was brilliant. I enjoyed the conversation. Did you learn anything? Did you come away with anything new after talking with Teddy?
Well, he just confirmed my questions, and I thought I knew the answer to it, but pardon me for saying I'm tired of talking about it, but I have to, because I'm falling, I'm becoming a victim of the box on the broadcast. And it's like, if it hits that line, and I'm sick of hearing it from the commentators, I'm sick of hearing it from the play-by-play, it seems now that the whole game, all we talk about is the pitch. Oh, that was a ball, and he missed it. No, that's not necessarily the case. Teddy Barrett, what he did basically summed up is the umpires today are in a no-win situation. They have this box that is constantly on every TV, every major league game that is out there. And the true strike zone that the umpires train on is different than that box. So,
and they're graded on.
Right. He said he could have, he could get back after a game, get his report on how he did on the true strike zone that the umpires behind the scenes train on, and he could have a perfect score. But on the telecast, he could have missed 4 or 5 pitches according to did the ball hit the line or not. So he said it's really a no-win situation because the public has no idea how we train. But the fact is it's different than the box. And he said the box should be for entertainment purposes only. And I thought that was really telling of what's going on. It's like we're giving you a false narrative of what the real strike zone is, but now all of a sudden everybody in America and everybody on Twitter has become an expert because they can see it right in front of their eyes. I think it's tough. I really do think they need to take the box down. It's starting to get, it's taken over the game. Everything
it's undermined. It's undermined the game.
You got to take that box away. It's ridiculous.
Okay. So let me ask you this. Brett Boone's up at the plate. You got a pretty good eye, right? You knew your strike zone pretty well.
I know my pitch strike zone perfect.
As every hitter will tell me.
No, but I say that it sounds arrogant. It's not. It's what we do. We know exactly what is a strike and exactly what is a ball. Brett Boone. Any big league accomplished player, they know the strike zone and they know it really, really good. We've just taken so many pitches in our mind, sure. We stand in the same spot. We know what a ball is and what a strike is, to the point of nauseam, just cause we've done it so much. So
it's part of your profession.
Pretty much most of the time you're correct. I mean, it's not a perfect science. I can't get it down to millimeters, but I know what a ball is and what a strike is, and especially who's behind the plate. And the players today, they're as good as they've ever been.
What does an umpire tell you when it's a borderline pitch that he says strike, you say no way? Tell me that. I know you don't turn around and argue, but you are going to get your point.
No, but I've got to get my point across because I got to make him think about that he just missed a pitch. So the next time that pitch is in the same position, he thinks twice about if I can convince him that he may have been wrong on a call. Next time that same pitch comes into play, he'll call it the correct way. Does that make sense? So yeah. I'm just setting up the scenario for next time. So very rarely will an umpire ever admit if I say that pitch is off the plate. You know, for example, this is a hypothetical. Johnny, that's not a strike. That's off the plate. The typical Booney, hey, it caught the corner. I thought it had enough of the edge. He's never going to say, Brett, I missed that one. Ever. Mm-hmm. Ever. But he might now, say, you know, I thought it was a good pitch. Is it going to be there all day? Is it going to be there all day? Is it going to be off the plate all day? That's my zone.
Just
that's
let me know.
Usually the back and forth. Yes.
Right. And what I've been told by umpires, I'll ask, you know, if somebody wants to ask you a question, they'll go, hey, was that a strike? Which is what a lot of hitters will say.
Yeah, but come on. Well, that's pandering. Well, you're giving him too much power. You're going to tell the umpire, was that a strike, Mr. Umpire?
No.
Well, I'm going to tell you
context.
That's not.
Wait a second. Right. In the context.
Remember, you're
looking at it from the hitter's perspective. I'm trying to give you the perspective of what umpires have taught me over the years. Okay. So
right.
A hitter says, hey, well, let me finish. Was that a strike? Brett Boone looks at the umpire. Was that a strike? He goes, and
I would
most
never
umpires,
say
I know you wouldn't. You're more professional, but some rube fell off the turnip truck, says, is that a strike? And most umpires will say, well, was that a hittable pitch? Yep, then it's a strike.
That's fair. That's in it. No, foul. That's
foul. Right. Okay.
I would never say. I think
well, you wouldn't say that.
When you're a young player coming up, maybe your first week in the big leagues, hey, is that at the top of the zone? It's almost like you're engaging. You want to have a relationship.
I think you missed
that. I would never say that. I would say that's not a strike. You've got to be better.
Now, these are old school guys I'm talking about, like the umpire during your dad's age.
They're not going to ask, is that a strike?
Okay.
They're going to say, wait a minute. Is that your zone today? It's going to be more, not a question form, but
it's a negotiation.
It's a negotiation. It's a side eye conversation. Right. You're going to tell me that's a strike, Johnny?
Then it better be that all day.
Right. It's not never going to be. Is that the top of the zone, Johnny? Never.
Well, you know,
that's not how it is.
The ones that drive the umpires the craziest, that drive them the absolute baddiest is pitchers and catchers. Cause when they're hitting, they'll have a strike zone that they want. And when they're pitching and catching, they want the strike zone to be as big as it can be. So there's a little inconsistency going back and forth.
Yeah. And the catchers, you know, the catchers really are back there fighting for their guy. I mean, they really are. More times. I mean, that's so important. And it is such a big part of the game. Those catchers are back there grinding. And they've got that constant ear of the umpire. So, it's an interesting dynamic. The catcher, the umpire, the hitter, the conversations, the cat and mouse going back and forth, the verbiage. It's really an interesting thing. It's kind of fun and to go through those scenarios and all the altercations I've had and the discussions and how we got to from point A to point B. It's really interesting.
Well, you're the one who told me, I didn't know this, that there might be two separate independent conversations going on at the same time. Umpire and the catcher are having a conversation, which Brett Boone has no business being a part of. Brett Boone has a separate conversation with the umpire, and that catcher better not say anything to you or the umpire in the middle of your conversation.
Right. Never.
And they can be going on simultaneously.
Without a doubt. Yeah, that catcher's having a problem with his umpire, and usually because he's not getting the strikes called, which is usually benefiting the hitter.
Right.
So by no means am I jumping into the middle. You know, I'm. Hey, you just keep calling. You just keep calling strikes balls, and I'm fine with that. So no, I never get into the middle of a conversation. That's their business. Just like if I have a problem with an umpire, or I don't want to say problem. If I have a discrepancy with an umpire and I think, hey, this is a strike, right, or this is the ball, the catcher never gets in between. That's between the hitter and the umpire.
All right. So do take us. You weren't a big bench jockey. You weren't out there lipping off in the dugout, were you?
Bench jockey. What's that from 1967?
I'm trying to use old school terms today.
Right. No. What is a bench jockey? That sounds like Ray Boone. We were really bench jockeying him, Brett.
Well,
the hell's a
little Ray Boone into the program.
Gramps, what the hell's a bench guy?
Right, would you chirp on the bench?
Chirp.
Would you lip off while you're in the dugout? Would Brett Boone run his mouth?
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Very rare situations, and it had to be a pretty upsetting event I went through. It had to be a horrible, horrible call. Very rarely, though, maybe a couple times a year would I actually come back to the dugout. I usually would say my piece out on the field. Would I come back to the dugout and continue to chirp? It's very rare for me, and it wouldn't even be a few times a year for me. Probably under 10 times in my career did I ever sit there and make a scene that I was chirping from the dugout after the fact. It was very rare.
We'll see it in baseball. So I want to go down this rabbit hole for you for just a minute, if you don't mind. What's your state of mind in that moment where he blew the call? It's just an egregious call. He blew it. You know it. He knows it. And you are so angry and so mad and so upset. Describe to me what that's like. Can you give it a comparison to anything the rest of us will go through in life?
Being wrongly accused.
Is it injustice?
That's how you feel. Okay. Yes. You feel you've been accused of something that you didn't do. It is a frustrating point. And
I can see the look on your face because
there's levels of it. You know, there's levels of the anger. It's if he missed a pitch and it was close, but damn it, that's been a ball all day. And it's strike three, man, I'm pissed, but I understand. If it's just outrageous and he just completely blew it in a situation, that's the times maybe, and this is far and few between, very rarely did this happen where I didn't say my piece. I'm as angry as I can be I never turned around and got in a guy's face and argued and chin to chin, never. But it was an intense argument under my breath, looking down at the ground where he's yelling at me and I'm yelling at him. And we get into it pretty much. For me to go back to the dugout, it's almost like I was out of control at that point. For me to be sitting in the dugout yelling at the umpire, that's true anger. Right. I mean, that's as angry as I can be, because I would never do that. Once I'm done on the field, I go in, maybe bitch and moan to my teammates. But never would I just get back on the top step and start yelling again. That just doesn't happen very often. I'm really mad if that, like, I'm out of my mind if that happens. And we try not to do that. We try to keep it on the field when we come back in. Yeah, maybe a slam of the helmet. A couple teammates will come up to you. Booney, was it as bad as it looked? Absolutely. But for me to sit there and continue to yell at him, man, that's different level. Cause you feel foolish. I did. Whenever I was yelling from the dugout, I felt like I'm not a man enough to go back on the field and get in his face.
Right.
I feel like I'm yelling. I feel like I'm throwing the snowball from behind the trees and I got a snowmobile running so I can escape. The guy that wants to fight, he's right in your face. It'll hit you right in the mouth with it with an ice ball.
Well, the funny part of that
analogy.
No, that's great, because for us as fans, human beings, non-baseball players, you don't see it in the NFL. You don't really see it in the NBA. You really don't see people just standing there jawing each other in any other sport like we do in baseball. So you talked about being out of control. One of the most famous clips of all time is George Brett running out of the dugout like a madman. It just loses control. I mean, he is a maniac as he goes out there. So we as fans watch that. You know, we would watch Lou Piniella, you know, nose to nose with Jim McKeon, spittle coming out of both their face. They're bumping each other with the bill of their caps. Real people don't get to do that anywhere. That's why it's so fascinating to us.
Well, the George, I can really relate to the George Brett incident, because people don't understand how big of a deal when you get and I'm not talking about a home run to win a game. If you get a base hit taken away from you, base hits are so hard to come by that when they remove one from it, sends something through your body that I can't explain. Like, you're almost going to faint. You know, you start to shiver and it's like, no, they can't take it. Back in the day, before, I think they've changed the rules since, you had to play five innings or the stats didn't count.
Right.
So if there's a rain delay in the fourth and you're 2-for-2, and they don't continue that game, that game never existed. And that happened to me one time, and it was like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? How long is this going to take for me to recover? Now, I was on the other side of the ledger where we got rained out in the fourth inning. I was 0-for-2 with a pair of strikeouts, and they wiped it from the books, and it was like, I felt like having a party. So the fact that you get a hit, and I'm referring to the George Brett, I've never gotten a legitimate home run that landed in the stands. I circled the bases. I got cheered. And then they took it away from me. I couldn't imagine what would be going through my body.
Well, then that's the fun part of this podcast, because as a fan, we can't relate. It almost sounds, Brett, like you're talking about a child. You're talking about someone taking your child away.
It is. You turn into an infant.
Right. You know, imagine.
At least I did.
I don't want to compare a base hit to Savannah, Jake, or the Twins, but it almost sounds like someone kidnapped your baby.
Yeah, if you take a hit away from you, I mean, that's fighting words.
Yeah, that's the passion we don't get. Passion we don't get.
And at any level, I mean, you take a hit away from me in spring training, it's not going to be as big of a deal, but it's still a big deal. I earned that thing. Give it to me.
Yeah, I mean, everybody knows the line from Bull Durham. What's the difference between being in the minor leagues and being in the big leagues is one hit a week.
Yep.
Over the course of a season, that's.
I hit a home millions run. Here's the worst thing that ever happened to me, I think, in my career. I hit a ball in Montreal, and it hit the foul pole. Eric Gregg's behind the plate. He calls it foul. Pedro Martinez is pitching. So there's a huge arguments. The next, I worked the count. I hit a ball off the wall for a double. The left fielder goes up, hits off his glove, double. They rule it an error.
Error.
So I went from a homer to he called it foul, but it was fair, to a double. To a 0-for-1 error. That's the worst of my career.
That is amazing. And folks, he remembers that to this day. And the look on his face, if you're watching us on YouTube, the look of disdain, disgust, and sadness and sorrow on Brett Boone's face is palatable.
They made it up to me, though. Wrigley Field, 1998. I had two home runs. Came up, windy day. Hit a bomb, 10 feet foul. Guy called it fair. For my third homer of the day, it counted. And to this day, it's every bit of 8 to 10 feet foul. And I saw it with my naked eyes. I didn't need a replay. One of the most, I got away with it. I felt like I got away with, I took 8 packs of gum from that 7-Eleven and nobody ever found out. That's still to this day. Woo, got that homer. And it was so foul. Anyway.
Okay. So help me with this then. If the umpire makes a mistake against you, of course you're going to go crazy. Do you recognize when you get one, you get away with one?
Oh yeah.
Do you keep track of those as well? Do you keep score on those, or those kind of just go by the wayside?
Matt, I'll tell you, there's only been a few. My first inside the Parker, I'll never forget it. Old Milwaukee Stadium, Kenny Kaiser's behind the plate. I'm safe easily. I'm a rookie. He calls me out. I go crazy. I don't get thrown out. I hit a home run my next at bat, a bomb. I touch home plate. I look at Kenny. I said, am I safer out on that one? Boom. And he gave me that look. I almost got thrown, but I didn't.
Oh, so he must have known he missed it.
Probably.
Otherwise, I would have thrown your butt out.
Kenny Kaiser missed a lot of calls. Yeah, but they're so far and few between. You know, it always comes to mind. They gave me that 3 home run game in Wrigley that clearly was foul. The one in Montreal that I got taken away from me from Pedro, that kind of evens that out. The inside the Parker, there had to be something that I made up for where I got away with one. Yeah. When you get away with one, you kind of have that little kid smile
don't
on your
anything,
face.
Don't
you know,
say
like,
anything.
Like, hee, hee, hee.
Don't
I got
tell
away
don't
with
tell
it.
Mom.
Right. But man, you take something away from me. Now I'm a maniac.
Mom Infant. Gave me 2 bags of chips. Don't say anything.
All right. That's enough. I'm getting too worked up.
Let's move on. Young players. Since we're talking about young Brett Boone, how much hype did you have when you came up?
Good amount of hype. More from a family perspective. I got through the minor leagues real quick, about just under 2 years. And, but it was more family hype. It was, you know,
first, third generation.
It was the first time it ever happened. You know, I was a top prospect, but at this, long story short, no, it wasn't the Jackson Holiday type hype I was.
That's where I'm going.
This kid's a number one pick and he's 20 years old. When I was 20 years old, I was in college.
Yeah.
I'm a junior in college.
You were at the Trojan Barrel.
I'm playing at the Pac-10. This kid's playing in the big leagues. It's amazing to me because I look back at my career and I got to the big leagues quick. And I look at these kids today that, you know, 20 years old. I'm thinking, how would I have reacted when I was 20 years old? You asked that 20-year-old Brett Boone, how would I have done? Oh, I'd have killed it. But if I'm realistic, looking back at that 20-year-old, I would have been overwhelmed. So I really tip my cap. I'm amazed when I see these guys playing in the big leagues and having success at such an early age. It's so hard. And, you know, Jackson Holiday right now, he's going through it. And he's number one pick in the minor leagues. He's going through a real tough time right now.
All right. Well, let's get to that because you have two phenomenal players. Ellie De La Cruz is crushing it for your former ball club, the Cincinnati Reds. You were just there. Mm-hmm. Then I have Jackson Holiday over there with so much hype. Give me the thought process on what should fans really have. And when I did pre and post game shows, I talk about realistic expectations, right? Realistic expectations because, yeah, I want every rookie to be rookie of the year and I want them to win the MVP and I want them to hit 40 home runs. That's not a reasonable expectation. So I look at Jackson Holiday coming up, and there was a while where he just couldn't sniff a hit. And everybody's like, oh, I don't know how good this guy is. You saw with Ellie De La Cruz. Oh, he's really good. Wait a minute. He's coming back down to earth. Maybe he's not for real. Oh, look how great he is. Right now, everybody's on his bandwagon. He goes 0 for 20. Everybody's going to jump off his bandwagon.
Well, that's sports.
But if I want you to give me listen, if you listen to the Boone podcast, we expect you to be a little bit smarter than everybody else. Give me reasonable expectations, would you?
Well, I think you look at a Jackson Holiday, and he set the bar pretty darn high. This kid comes out at 18 years old.
He did or somebody else did?
No, he has set the bar very high. First of all, by being a number one pick, you're going to have all the fanfare right then. People expect a little bit more. Your number one pick, you get paid $10 million, whatever it is. Okay. Expectations go through the roof. That's part
reasonable.
Of, that's give it. Well, you know what you signed up for. You want to be great. You're going to be treated like the great, the good, the bad, the ugly. He just went out to the minor leagues and I just looked at his numbers, 583 at bats in the minor leagues. This kid at 18, 19, 20 years old, hit 321 combined, 451 on base percentage for an 18, 19, 20 year old in the minor leagues. It is phenomenal.
Who should be at USC in the Pac-12 or something like that.
Right.
If you're normal.
Not even right. It hasn't even signed yet. That's really, really impressive to do that at high professional levels. Comes to the big leagues, all the hype in the world. His dad, who's a good guy we've had on the podcast, I played against him, was a great player in his own right.
Yeah, we talked to him right before the draft, didn't we?
Yeah, I heard we have another holiday in the wings that's going to be a great player. Obviously, those numbers at the minor league level, they don't just happen. You have to be pretty darn good to put those numbers up, especially over 500 or over 700 plate appearances. So he's the real deal. For whatever reason, he comes to Baltimore. They hit him down in the lineup. He moves from short to second, looks as athletic as he's advertised to be, and just gets off to a rough start. And now you're thinking, okay, I know I'm good, but rough start. And then it snowballs. And then all of a sudden you're 1 for 30. And now you're 2 for 34. And he got pinch hit for. And they've given him some days off. He's 20. He's going to be fine. This kid's going to be, you never can tell how guys are going to respond in the big leagues. I'll tell you one thing. Jackson Holliday's a big leaguer. And he will be a big leaguer for a long time. Whether he's a batting champ, whether he's an MVP candidate, I don't know. Nobody knows until you get to the big leagues and do it. But the skill set is there. He's going to be a really good player at the big league level. Nobody wants to get off to it. I was talking about this with my son the other day. Jackson Holliday has probably never struggled this much in 34 at-bats at any level in his entire life. So he's going through it, and I'll tell you what, he's going to be okay. The thing that's on top of it, he's got 18 punch outs.
Right.
And this is a guy in the minor leagues that punched out just as much as he walked. He's got 2 walks to 18 punch outs. In the minor leagues, he had 138 punch outs, 138 walks, which is in this day and age,
that's
impressive too, because nobody does that anymore. Everybody's strikeouts are high and their walks are low. Jackson's was pretty even. So he's pressing a little bit. The expectations, it seems like a really good kid.
Yeah.
Going to play it out. It whether he's going to start tonight and plays tonight and gets out of it and gets 3 hits and off to the races and he never looks back. That could happen at any time. Or he could scuff a little bit more, get sent back to the minor leagues for a little more honing of his
skills. Which isn't the worst thing in the world.
No, and it's not. And it's not a big deal. Most of us normal people on earth,
right?
We didn't just get called to the big leagues and then we were in the All-Star game and everything was roses.
Not everybody's junior, right?
I mean, I remember I got called to the big leagues and I was pretty on a fast track and I got called up and I remember talking to my teammates afterwards and I had some guys, I was signing bats for guys and my mind, I was going, I'll never see these guys again. And I think I even said that I'll never be back in the minor leagues again. Well, fast forward to the following spring training, I'm back in the minor leagues and then I'm in the big leagues and then I'm in the minor leagues again and the big leagues. I was on the shuttle.
For the first
half of the next year, I went up and down 3 more times. So that's normal. That's what normal people go through. Usually you don't just get to the big leagues.
That's more normal all-stars go through, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. It's very rare that you come to the big leagues at an early age, never to see the minor leagues again. That's a very rare thing, and it's normal to go through that. Like I said, Jackson Holliday might find it tonight, might get 3 hits. He gets some confidence. He finally, by getting some results, and he's off to the races, and he's this great player for the next 15 years. Or that might not happen. He might have to go to the minor leagues for a little more, not because he needs more minor, but he needs to rest his brain. He needs to get, hey, I just need to take a breath here, get out of the spotlight, and just do what I do and get it going again, get called back up. You never know. You never know. It takes some guys click right away, which is rare, very rare. Most of us need some honing, some learning, some humble pie before we get our footing and become big league players.
And that's why I've said this before on the radio, that this is counterintuitive. When I would go down and do TV games for the Durham Bulls, and I'd sit down, I'd talk to Charlie Montoya, who was a manager, and then I'd go sit down with the farm director afterwards. We would talk about guys that are killing the ball. That's great. I want to see him struggle a little bit. Like, why do you want to see him struggle? And I was taught this. There's two things. We could do everything we can to the minor leagues. Two things we can't do. We can't replicate the speed of the game in the upper deck. Everything else is the same, but you can't replicate the speed. You can't replicate playing in front of 50,000 fans at Yankee Stadium. And what I was told is I'd rather have my first round draft pick struggle in single A, because you're all going to struggle at some point in life, but I'd rather him struggle at single A, learn how to get out of that funk, than try, because it's a lot easier to do it in Winston-Salem than it is at Citizens Bank Park.
Well, you add that too, to I don't care what anybody says. And I grew up, I've got about as much amateur time on big league fields as probably anyone that's ever walked the earth. My dad was still in the big leagues when I was in the minor leagues. My whole life was spent at big league stadiums, playing out there, shagging fly balls, hitting in the cage. You can't replicate going to the plate your first time as a big leaguer versus the minor leagues. It's just different. And I can remember it vividly right now, coming to the plate for the first time in my major league debut at Camden Yards, stepping into the box. And after that first pitch was thrown, stepping out of the box, it's just different. It's different. I used this reference the other day. It's like I'm playing at a local dive bar and now I'm at Carnegie Hall. There's right. Something different about it that you just have to go through. It's probably like being on tour. You know, it's probably like you're playing on the this.com tour and the that.com tour and the lower levels. Then all of a sudden you're at a major tour event. It's just different and you can't explain it till you actually get there. But once you get a hang of it and you get past that, like you said, that third deck, well, then it's just baseball.
Then it's baseball.
It's just baseball. It's a little bit faster, but these guys, these holidays, the LA De La Cruz, speed isn't a problem for these guys.
No.
The speed they've got. So they've just got to go through those other nuances, and we all have to go through them. You mentioned LA De La Cruz. This kid, he could be unbelievable. I mean, he's got 15 bags already. He might steal 90 this year.
With ease.
His OPS is over 1,000. The one struggle, and a lot of guys deal with that these days, is the strikeout. His ratio is still huge. He strikes out like one every 2.5 at bats.
Free
but
swing.
when he's putting the ball in play, he's electric.
Right. He's a total game changer when he gets on base.
That total package right there, the LA De La Cruz, 6'7", cannon of an arm, runs like the wind. He's hitting .313 this year.
But I don't think anybody cares about the strikeouts anymore.
Well, it depends. Everybody strikes out a lot more. You start striking out every other at bat. Now you're getting into Joey Votto land. That's a little right. too much. But once again, LA De La Cruz, he's 22 years old. We're talking about a baby with that frame and that skill set. I mean, he could be potentially the next, Aaron Judge on the offensive side. Except with speed.
Yeah.
He's a phenom, five tool guy. And it's fun to see if one day, 3-4 years from now, we're talking about De La Cruz being an MVP and just the best player in baseball. He's got that type of skill set.
All right. We brought back the mailbag, folks, the Brett Boone mailbag. Here's the deal. I'm going to remind everybody, we don't put this podcast behind a paywall. We offer it up for free wherever you get it, on the Odyssey app, Apple, wherever you go. We put it up on YouTube. We do this for free. Only thing we ask is, please leave us a rating. Please leave us a review. Please subscribe to the podcast, because that helps the algorithm so more people find us, so more people can download, so more people can be a part of this podcast. If you enjoy it, tell your friends. And again, leave a rating and review. It really does mean a lot to us. Now, in order to get people to participate, because this isn't like my Infinity Sports Network show where I could take telephone calls all night from people around the country, people want to go back and forth and have conversations or be part of the podcast with us. So we've opened up Brett's mailbag. If you want to email us, you can. BrettBoone10@yahoo.com. BrettBoone10@yahoo.com. We made some little nifty graphics that Brett has been sharing. I've been sharing as well, asking you to send us a question for the mailbag. And if we use it, Brett is going to send you
shoelace.
No.
Oh, baseball card.
Autographed baseball card. So yes, Brett's going to sign a baseball card for you if we use your question on the podcast. I didn't ask him. I just told him he had to. BrettBoone10@yahoo.com. So the first one we have in our mailbag today is from Kevin Suarto. So Kevin goes, with the A's leaving Oakland and the talk about whether or not Oakland can get an expansion team, and then they're saying the A's are no better than AAA teams. At what point does an expansion lessen the quality of big leaguers and the teams are fielding players that may not be MLB quality? So every time we talk about expansion, Brett, we talk about that the product gets watered down. Is there enough arms right now to expand by two teams to have another 10 starting pitchers when we have teams that don't even have five starters and they go with a beginning pitcher?
I think so. I think absolutely. It's going to set up the divisions better too. Equally, I think you're going to go back to an East-West and not have the three divisions because it's going to equal out if you get 32 teams in there. I think absolutely. You know, you go back in the history of baseball, and it went from 14 teams. Then in my day, it was 28 teams, and then they expanded two more. I think with the expansion of the baseball and the global impact that baseball is having, the fact that, you know, Dominican's always a huge pool for major league talent, but now Japan's becoming a real player.
Cuba's
becoming Venezuela. A real player. So you're taken from such a bigger pool. I think the talent is definitely there to suffice for two more expansion teams. So yes, I think absolutely. Baseball is getting more popular and more popular. It's starting to be played at higher levels in more parts of the world,
right,
than we're used to. And like I said, the fact that Cuba's a hotbed, and for years and years, you weren't getting any Cuban players. Now you're getting Cuban players. Japan's starting to come on the scene. Best player in the world, Shohei Ohtani from Japan. That was unheard of 20 years ago. And I think you're going to see more and more as time goes on. So yeah, I think we're definitely ready for more expansion.
Okay. So that was from Kevin. You've got an autographed baseball card coming your way. Next one we have is from Brandon and Yakima. Says, Brett, when you get traded in season, how do you cope with the living situation? I'm sure you have a pile of personal effects in your former team city. When do you have time to move? Do you pack your family with you? How does all that work? That's from Brandon Yakima.
A lot of that went on for me early in my career. We just talked about that, going on the shuttle. I'm in the big leagues. I'm in the minor leagues. So I got a place in Calgary, Canada. I got a place in Seattle, and you're back and forth. It's really a nightmare. Is what it is. Now, once you're a big league level and you're making a lot of money and you get traded, it's really no big deal. You have people to handle that. You get you and your family and you move on to the next city and your stuff will follow because money is really, the price is no object. When you're a minor leaguer and you're going from double A to triple A, triple A to the big leagues, man, you've got leases and you're not making a ton of money. So it's really hard. People, that's behind the scenes of what really goes on in professional baseball. It's not easy, especially before you make it. So yeah, I remember that. I got my lease here and hey, I got called to the big league. So I need somebody to cover my lease in AAA because I might be back. And I'm going back to the big leagues. And now I got to stay in a hotel again because they got me out of that lease because I couldn't afford both because I'm not making enough money. It's a nightmare, but you find a way.
How do you get your car from place to place?
Oh, you don't have a car. You find a way. You get to the big league city and you work a deal with a car dealership and you leave them tickets. They'll give you a loaner. That's how you work that deal. So, it's a lot of behind the scenes stuff. That's a pain in the neck, but it's life things, you know, that happen in all occupations before you really make it and make a name for yourself. That's kind of being in the bushes. That's what it's all about. And it's part of what makes you grow up and appreciate when you do make it. Like I said, these guys, when they're making 10, 15, 20 million a year, they get traded. It's like, I'll get myself on the jet and just send my things, and I'll have people that handle my new. That's what. No, I'm
You're
not saying
so
me. I'm
bougie.
Saying. No, I'm saying today's player.
Oh, I thought Brett was being bougie.
No, not me. I'm sitting there going, well, today, if you get traded, and let's say you're a 10-year veteran that just got traded and you're making $15 million, what does it matter to you? You don't have the little things. You don't have to worry about penny right. pinching. You call your agent, you say, hey, get me accommodations in my new city. Get all my stuff there. I have people to do that. That's what they do.
Well,
I got to concentrate on baseball.
Right. And the union has rules that, you know, if I get traded to a new city, they got to put you up for 10 days in a hotel.
Right. And you're not worried about that. These guys with the amount of money they're making at the top level, they don't worry about, well, it'll be handled. Whatever needs to be taken care of will be taken care of. I will have a soft pillow to lay my head down on. I got a game tomorrow. That's top.
But in the minor leagues, you've already
minor
signed
leagues,
the
it's
lease.
A grind.
Yeah, it's a grind. So it's a reward for getting to the big leagues. Okay.
But it's life things. It's life things that not just athletes go through it. People from all walks of life go through the same thing minor leaguers go through.
All right. So I'm going to say Brandon Yakima deserves an autographed Brett Boone baseball card.
You got it.
Okay. The last one, I'm not sure. Hey, Booney. This is from Brett with two T's. So he's already starting off on the bad foot.
Brett, come on.
Just wanted to write to say that your podcast is kick ass. I've been a fan of yours since the late 90s, early 2000s. Your perspective as a multi-generational MLB player is invaluable and captivating. Thank you for everything you're doing. Go M's. There's no question to the mailbag, but I liked it. If he could have said, you know, Brett, what's it like hanging out with Rich all the time? I would have for sure given him the baseball card. But is that worth, do we give him a baseball card?
Well, you're supposed to only read questions, but yeah, why not?
I said, why not? I'm giving him a baseball card. Not my cards, go. They're yours.
There you go.
All right, so
He's in.
That's what you got to do, folks. Send it to BrettBoone10@yahoo.com. We read it on the air. You'll get an autographed Brett Boone baseball card. All right, that's going to wrap everything up for the podcast for today. What do we have coming up?
What do we have coming up? The next few we've got... Mike Blowers from the Seattle Mariners will be coming up. Oh, and we've got a special one next week. I just remembered this. Mike Cameron, May 2nd, 2002, hit 4 home runs in a game. Mike and myself went back-to-back twice in the first inning. Friend of mine, friend of yours, friend of the program, John Rooney, who's now a voice with the St. Louis Cardinals. He does the play-by-play for the Cardinals. He was on the call for the Chicago White Sox. He's been on the podcast before, so he's going to be a part of this panel. It's going to be Mike Cameron, Jim Parquet, who was a pitcher in that game, who reluctantly agreed to come on the show. He gave up four homers that day. He gave up one to me, 3 to Cammy. He's coming on. And we're going to have John Rooney, who was on the call for the Chicago White Sox. I wanted to get the perspective from the booth. What was going through his mind? How did this compare? Obviously, Rooney's been doing this for a long time. How does this compare with all-time greatest moments? For me, as a player that hit 2 and at the end of the game felt like I had a bad game because my teammate hit 4, I want his perspective. So that's going to be a cool one. I'm looking forward to that. That'll be out. The day that on the anniversary. So that'll be out a Thursday. And then we'll keep grinding. I haven't got past that right now. Oh, Mark Grant's going to be coming up. Voice of the Padres. We're going to get his early season Padre perspective, how that National League or National League West is looking from his perspective. So other than that, we keep them rolling.
All right. By the way, for those that are watching, you haven't lifted up high enough. Those of you watching on YouTube for your shirt.
Yeah.
Which shirt is that? Because I only see like the top part of it.
This turning 2 with Booney.
There you go.
Come on.
All right. I like the shirt. That's going to do it for the podcast for today. Again, don't forget, rate, review, tell your friends, and subscribe to the Boone Podcast. Until we get together next time, thanks, everybody.